Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the podcast. This episode, I'm introducing you to Hakeem Bourne McFarlane, who tells a powerful story about growing up in a house full of addiction and silence. And while Hakeem was an exceptional athlete, he struggled with his childhood and those experiences. But it was when he was in prison the second time that the miracle occurred and everything changed in his life.
It was the first time my little brother visited me after he passed. And it was after, it was in jail. I think it was about 2 months after that fourth day. Had to be about 6 to 8 weeks. And I was in jail, but I was sleeping and I was holding him and he was healthy. He was like 2 years old, 1.5. I was holding him, but I could hear his voice. And it was saying, Hakeem is going to be okay.
How would you introduce yourself?
Big Dream Hakeem, and the big dream is to help you live yours by embracing who you were supposed to be before society tried to make you someone you're not.
I love that. Yes, and society is always trying to make us.
Always.
My gosh. It's like this unstoppable force. Mm-hmm. And you really kind of part of the process, I think, is waking up to the fact that it's happening, which can be hard.
Yeah. Well, the first step is to wake up when you said you would.
Yeah.
In the first place, skip the snooze. It's choose yourself, not snooze yourself.
That's awesome. I love that. I actually avoid the alarm clock as much as possible, but I can appreciate what you're saying. Absolutely. Let me ask you, so when you were a kid, did you think this is what you'd be doing?
Well, you know, the funny thing is, I've been speaking my whole life. And what I try to tell people is that your gift is likely suppressed when you were younger. Like we said, the societal norm. Stop speaking. Stop cracking jokes. Stop singing. Stop playing the instrument. You got to do this assignment. You either pass or fail, or you follow the law or go to jail. You go to heaven or you go to hell. It's like they give you these boundaries. There's no creative space. And so I was a talker my whole life. I didn't know I'd be speaking. I didn't know that I'd be creating a movement, but I was talking. I got kicked out of class all the time for talking, cracking pranks. I was the lead chant leader of every team I played on. I was the motivational dude at halftime. And then I ended up going to school and giving several presentations as a communications major, still with no intent to speak because I wanted to go to the NFL. But I was practicing my whole life. And that's why I know I give this analogy. The only other time I feel the way I feel when I'm on stage is the 3 times I've caught in a Hail Mary to win the game.
I actually can't even imagine that feeling, to be honest, but like I am imagining it, but I know it doesn't even come close. So let me ask, so you sound like you came into this world, you're joyful, you have something to say, you're filled with, I don't know, just like rambunctious, amazing spirit. Did your parents foster that or were they like, holy cannoli?
Well, it was a combination. I think my mom was very supportive, always showed love. We argued a lot because I was hard-headed and I didn't listen. I always thought I was right. But anytime we left the home, she always had my back. She never said, oh, you messed up. Oh, you're not good enough. Oh, all she would do is try to provide guidance, love, and support. Okay. But also what was lacking was structure and discipline. So I was really expressive because my mom was like, just go ahead, wear what you want. If you want to draw on your cleats, go ahead. If you want to wear freaking duct tape shoes, go ahead. If you want to wear a full long john suit to school, go ahead. And I would just wear whatever I want. My mom would let me express myself, but also there was no boundaries in my expression. So I would be talking back to teachers. I'd be talking back to kids. I'd be talking back to coaches. And that was where, you know, kind of the restriction and the rebellious towards authority came was because, well, Mama D said I could. They're like, this is not your house. This is school. This is the field. This is the world. And so I had to kind of navigate that eventually through consequences and eventually became accountable. But, you know, my dad now, we became close when I was about 20. He was a rock and roller traveling, but not having him around, it was hard for me to connect with men unless the coaches believed in me the way my mom did. And that's what I've seen upon reflection. If the coaches try to play the father role, I didn't listen because I only had one dad. I'm not listening to y'all. I don't got a dad, and it definitely ain't you. So that balance and then forgiving my father allowed me to elevate and increase my spirituality, because me and him, when we talk, I hear myself in him. He hears himself in me, and we weren't even growing up together. And my mom says it all the time. Like, how do you sound like your dad? You've seen him 3 times. You are just like your dad. Every time we argue, you sound just like your dad. You sound just like your dad. And I'm like, I don't even know him. So that's how I know, man. Like, fellas, if you're listening, forgive your daddy or you will not be as much of a man as you were supposed to be.
Oh, wow. I mean, it's so interesting because you and I have that a little bit in common, because my father worked for a company in Chicago that oftentimes when we moved back to the States, he would be gone for 3 months on a job or 6 weeks on a job. So lots of my childhood was my dad walking out the the door to go to O'Hare, to fly somewhere and be somewhere for an extended period of time. And he loved to travel. He loved different cultures. He loved everything. But I can't even imagine being in music and having to travel, because it sounds exhausting. Every person who's into touring and does touring is like, it's really fun, but it's exhausting. And I can imagine like coming home from something like that and just wanting to sleep for like 3 weeks. But that's me.
Yeah, he never came to my home, but he was a Rolling Stone. He was out there and partying a lot. And, you know, he's 14 years sober now, but him and my mom met partying, getting lit first. And then one thing I always thank Mama D for all the time is she was partying up until she got the pregnancy test and she quit everything cold turkey.
Wow.
Yeah. She's like, oh, and my dad was like, well, I still got to go. And so then he just kept rolling and she locked in, started being a server and took care of me the best she could.
Let me ask you, you know, I know when you play sports, I was in high school soccer. Okay. Like, you travel a little bit, you go to other cities. Sometimes you compete across the state line. Based on your father's traveling and almost like adventuring, did it ever make you want to become a traveler or go out in the world and have adventures?
Well, funny thing, funny now, wasn't funny then. We never had the finances to travel. We would drive from Minneapolis to Wisconsin and go see my grandma and go fishing. But I was the only child in those days. And so I didn't really have friends. I had neighbors in her neighborhood, but I learned to build forts and play with action figures and make mazes in my house and play video games and dance in the mirror and be by myself. And I never really knew what was out to travel, to have the desire to travel, because we didn't have the finances. And I would, upon reflection, I see that I kind of had some animosity when my friends would be like, oh, we went to Disney World. I'm like, how the heck? And I would go to my teammates' house. I'm like, they got this pantry. You can walk in the pantry as big as my apartment. All this food. They got a trampoline, a pool. My mom's like, I know, you can go over there. We just don't have it. I never held that against her, because I knew I felt her love and genuine compassion. And as I grew, my little brother was born when I was 10, and then he was sick until I was 16 when he passed. And then I ended up going D1 full ride, and that was my first time moving. I moved to North Dakota, and that was a different experience. It's honky-donky farmland up there. Shut up and run the ball, boy. That's what it is. If you black, you better run the ball. Don't say nothing. And I didn't like that. So I left, and I went to a Southern Minnesota school, Winona. That was another city that was similar to that type of culture. Got in trouble, got kicked out, went back home. And then in that second school, I got into a house fight and they gave me 20 years probation, first degree assault for felony assault. And so then I couldn't travel. And so then I became resentful towards maps, geography, planes, any type of vacation promotion. I'm like, look at the freaking ocean. I ain't never going to the ocean. I'm here for 20 years. And that, so then it just became not non-existent in my mind. I didn't even want to think about it because I couldn't travel. I could, there's a bunch of other stipulations. So it was also something that was going on inside. And then 11 years later, I got released from probation 9 years early for good behavior after going through a bunch of stupid choices. And when that happened, 3 months later, I moved to Manhattan. So I went from the mini apple to the big apple. I had a cage in my mind of no travel. Then the probation was lifted and I was like, oh my God, I can travel anywhere. And all of a sudden I'm going to the biggest city in the world. So that was like the biggest transformation of my life. I mean, there's a lot of huge turning points, but that, and then since then I've traveled every month. Every month I go on vacation now since that was 2021.
That's amazing. I love that. And the phrase, a cage in your mind, is so powerful, but also true. It's mm-hmm. so true. And so many of those cages are self-imposed. Like we create them. We create right. those cages. What I find really powerful and beautiful about your story, but I also think now I'm talking to you, so I get a sense of your spirit, which is kind of unstoppable. But, you know, when you were a kid and you're in sports and you're doing all this, did you know you were good? Like, did you have a sense that this was something you excelled at? And how did that happen?
I don't, you know, because we didn't, my mom wasn't like, go outside and run. I was just like, this is so fun. Nobody can guard me. Nobody can tell me what to do. Everybody loves me. I go in class. There's rules. There's there. It's not fun. I'm like, fine, I'll do this test. And I was smart. I got A's, B's, C's. And I wasn't even trying. I didn't study. I would just take the math test all the way through grade school, high school, same thing. And when I got on the field, there was just a different version that came out where it was, this is no longer about the rules of the game. It's about competing with my team. And so it changed from against something to with something. And now I flip that to with the choose yourself community against the societal norm. Now that comes with a large umbrella of things from big business, big pharma, politics, pop culture, victimhood, blaming, complaining, self-sabotage, self-destruction, self-neglect. All that is a societal norm, consumption loop. So now we're trying, and we are succeeding at building accountability, not resentment, but resilience and action in small systems in solitude that we do alone and we share together, just like in sports. So this is second nature to me. When you're off in off season, yeah, you have off season team training, but then outside of that, you also have to train. Otherwise, they're going to be able to tell when it's time for you to run that route or shoot that ball that you ain't do nothing in off season. And so whenever those emotions come in and adversity comes, uncertainty and all the trials and tribulations of life, did you do the work before the storm comes? Because you can't repair your roof in the rain.
Yeah. Yeah. I could try to repair my roof in the rain, but I'd slip off and fall on the ground. Because
yep. Now just, you'd be wet and your house would be broke. Yeah. And your tailbone, maybe.
Yes. Can I ask you, because every once in a while I like to ask my guests this, you know, in your career, in sports, do you have a favorite memory and would you like to share it?
Yeah, I do. I do. I have two, actually. There was one, I think I was in third grade. And let me just tell y'all about Mama D. She dressed to the nines. She's in all the team colors, airbrush, Mama D, team logo, no matter if it's football, basketball, soccer, hockey. She's the white lady with the short hair, with the long braid extensions, with the gaudy jewelry and all this. She's your typical inner city white mom for a light-skinned athlete who is the best at everything, right? And my mom was not your typical parent because she didn't work a corporate job. We always drove a hoopty. We always, you know, we never were able to bring the fruit at halftime. We weren't like the booster club parents. My mom always kind of felt out of those kind of parents because we were struggling and from the hood, not the hood, but the mindset was a poverty mindset, which is typically generated in the hood. But we grew up in the suburbs, which shout out to Mama D for getting us to the suburbs. And so I could hear her scream all the time. And when I'm in a zone, you can't hear anything. You don't hear the fans. You don't hear the pads cracking. You don't hear your knees popping. You don't hear your finger pop. You're your adrenaline. But I could hear my, go Hakeem, go Hakeem, go Hakeem, all my whole life, right? Now, I used to be embarrassed, but I realized I should never. And kids, if you're embarrassed about your parents being proud of you, shut up. You're going to miss it one day. I miss it all the time. That's why now when she comes to my speeches, I can hear her saying it. She can't say it because I'm speaking, but I can hear her when I know I'm in that same flow that feels like a Hail Mary. The memory of my mom comes back where she's supporting me, even if she's there or not, because I feel the same flow of neurotransmitters and contribution and the proof of that I did my work on my own. So fourth grade, my mom was an all-star track. Punt, pass, and kick. She beat all the boys in punt, pass, and kick, ran track. I ran one of my first touchdowns. I'm running outside. I'm running towards the sideline. I turn upfield. I'm running. My mom's just right next to me. She's running right next to me. She's like, go Hakeem, go Hakeem. I'm running. I'm like, what the heck? My mom is right here. I'm trying to run faster. She's just running with me along the sideline. We're running together to the touchdown. She's like, go Hakeem, go. And I was like, oh, that was cool. We just scored. I was like, one of my first touchdowns in football ever. And that feeling really, really locked me into football overall, because when I played soccer, she never did that. When I played hockey, she wasn't that loud. But when I played football, she loved watching me play football, and that was a huge memory. The other one is, there's two other ones. I'll just leave with one. There was one we played a rival team, and it was 7-0. They kicked the ball to me at the end of the half. I ran about 120 yards, ran the ball back. So now we're up 7, we're at 7-7. We kick a field goal. Then they kick a field goal. They're up 10-7. And then at the end of the half, I called a Hail Mary to win the game. So I had beat them with two touchdowns on my own. And then we got into a big brawl after. But the Hail Mary and the kick return were both like two of my best plays ever in the same game. And so those two memories were really, I cherish those for sure.
Oh, my gosh. I just have to say, your mother sounds, wow, larger than life, but also unstoppable, just like you. And I kind of am just enthralled with the fact that she was running alongside you, because even when I was in soccer in high school, and, you know, I did a lot of running, I did track when I was in grade school. I don't think I could have ever done that. And so I'm just kind of like gobsmacked right now.
Yeah, she was amazing, man. She always would, she would work and then leave work to see my game and then go back to work.
Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. And I want to just pivot, because you are so thoughtful, and I can tell that you're very empathetic and compassionate. You're just incredibly thoughtful. You know, here you are in high school. You're good at sports. You're funny. I'm sure everybody just kind of loved you. And, but then you have this situation happening at home with your brother. Was it difficult to balance those two things? I can't imagine.
I led with ego. Then I put the mask on. I was the man of the house. My mom was broken, so I couldn't be broken too. What the heck? She's worried about me. I'm like, I'm fine. Just like the masculine perception or expectation of society. Don't talk about it. Don't cry. You're fine. You're a man. I'm like, all right, I ain't have a dad around or a coach to tell me it's cool to talk about it. I just did what I saw in the movies. I just did what I read in the books. I just did what the action figures did that I play with. And so I always made it seem like I was cool. Had a lot of friends, had girlfriends, went to every practice, every sport, never skipped school, never, I could have skipped. Nobody was at home. My mom was in the hospital with my brother. I was like, I'm not, didn't drink, didn't smoke, none of that. until I went to college. And that's when a lot of other stuff came out. But when I was dealing with that, it was just like, I didn't think he was going to die. So I'm like, okay, this is just temporary. I know I have to be successful in sports so I can get us all this money so my mom don't got to work and my little brother can get a cure. I was like, okay, so I have to go to school. I have to play sports. But there were times where I would feel like I wasn't there for him enough because I was going to practice. And so I had to find that balance of, okay, I have to go to the NFL ASAP before he dies, which put pressure on myself. And that pressure, if you don't reach your expectations from your own pressure without a place of being able to accept your shortcomings, which are not failures, it's just a shortcoming, then you become to get discouraged and seek masking, numbing, and excuses. And that's what ended up happening eventually. But, you know, seeing how many surgeons, he was the first one ever with short gut syndrome, which is when you don't have as much intestines as you're supposed to, and leukemia. So they would give him steroids that would mess up the short gut. Then they would give him freaking TPN that would mess up the chemo. Then he had bone marrow transplant, radiation, all these things from age 0 to 6. And I'm like, what is all this stuff happening to this little kid? And I'm like, this ain't no project. So that was my first time being like, I don't like the hospital. And now I don't even take ibuprofen. I take a gut repair solution, Whole Foods Organic by an organic chemist that I've had an interview on my podcast. I know what I'm taking. I eat Whole Foods, 20% fun. So I do like cheesecake wings. I like to cheers on the beach. I can do those things, but you got to take the proper action. You don't want to be dependent on the hospital or your doctor. That's one thing I know for sure. And seeing all these surgeons, different dude from Asia, dude from Africa, white dude, Russian. I'm like, how has he got so many surgeons? Well, they was trying to get their retirement plan. If you can figure out the cure for these two things the first time ever, you're good. You can retire. And so seeing that, I'm like, all right, y'all just treat him like a dang science project. And that made me feel like I had to do more, but I was still so young. It wasn't much I could do. I was working at Foot Locker, but what is that going to do? I spent all that money on shoes. Dang it.
I want to just say how sorry I am about your brother. Truly, truly. I find your comment about ego really fascinating. Can I ask you, when was the first time you kind of stepped back and thought, whoa, ego, I maybe need to take a look at that?
Mm-hmm. It was day 4. On my 8 days in isolation, on my second 8-month stint in jail. Because the first 8 months, I found a way to numb. Second, and then I got out for 30 days, didn't stop partying. Went back 30 days later for another 8 months. And this time, the whole jail shut down and they flushed out all the pills and all the illegal substances in there. So everybody in there was sober, which you can imagine what happens with 350 dudes. Stop muscle relaxers, Xanax, and sleeping pills. Now we're all upwired on coffee and somebody overdosed. So for 8 days, you had to sit in your cell without unlocking the door. No phone call, no shower, no hot food. No, I didn't have a pen or a pad or a book because I just got in. The day I got in, the jail shut down. When you get in, you're supposed to be in orientation for 48 hours, and then you get to go into a normal population. But when I got in, I was stuck in that cell with just a roll up. And so sitting in there, there was a transition that happened. And I think we all go through this in 4 phases. Whenever we transition from a different relationship, an addiction, a new city, a new experience, a new job, a new spirituality, a new belief system. And the first day is withdrawals. The first day is withdrawals. Everything you was used to, now you try to do life without that. You're like, okay, what is this? Where am I? How do I do this? I don't know. I had somebody with me last time. I was working for this company. I was in this city. I had this body type. I used to be addicted to this. How do I do this? You go through withdrawals. The next phase typically is anger. I can't do this. This is, it was them. It was her. Why me? This is messed up. My dad, my mom, my background, these white people, my brother, blah, blah, blah. The third phase, when you try to fit in with whoever. And a lot of people go back to toxic relationships in this phase because now they're like, who is it? Well, oh, they love me. Perfect. Feel me. Heal me. Oh, I don't want to. How could I? Oh, new addiction. Oh, I can't. Oh, I'm going to go back. I'm going to travel. I'm going to go back home. I can't make it. But if you make it through that phase, you get to accountability and ascension. And so I went through withdrawals, literal physical withdrawals. Then I was angry and banging my bed, 350 men in their cell, banging my bed. Let me the fuck, man, I got to get to, oh, my mama, and, oh, my, y'all some, all this. But then my head was hurting because I was yelling so much and my throat was dry because the water was dirty and my lips was crusty. I'm like, this is not for me. I don't know how y'all still doing this. I got to take a nap. I'm dehydrated and my head hurts. And that was the third phase when I was trying to join all them. And then eventually I just sat there and I was like, okay, I've been eating freaking bagels and oranges for 3 days, drinking BS water. Nobody's coming to get me. No more girls, no more touchdowns. Mama D can't come save me. My dad, my uncle. My dad actually called my girl at the time and was like, you need to leave him. And she left me, never talked to me again in that 8 days. When I got out, she didn't even answer, you know? And that was one of the toughest love, but the best thing he could have done for me. I thank him for that every time because I wasn't listening to nobody, which is why I kept going in and out. And then in that moment, I was like, what can I do? Finally. What can I do? Because if I could have called somebody to bail me out, if I could have called the dope man to get high, if I could have went and called Shorty to hang out, if I could have went to the gym and played basketball, if I could have went and played video games, I would have never figured that out because you just get distracted. And we all do that. But then you get to a point where you're done dealing with your BS, your own lack of accountability. And that's pillar one of the choose yourself process that comes in five pillars, was born in this moment. And that's the trigger point. You have three types of triggers. One, when other people trigger you, that means you're unhealed and they're triggering parts of you that you don't even know you have. The second type of trigger is when you trigger yourself to be accountable. And the third type of trigger comes after you evolve, is when you trigger others to choose themselves. And it's in that order. And so this moment was my second trigger. And the first thing I did was I can do push-ups. That's what I can do. So I had a little sliver at the clock. I can only see half the clock, but every 15 minutes, I would do 25 push-ups and 25 sit-ups. And then I would sit there and wait for the next 15 minutes between first and third meal. And what this taught me was a few things. One, you can only control what you control. If you can't do nothing, do something. Two, fitness is a way to help you boost the neurotransmitters and actually help you gain strength. Because I was weak from the withdrawals and the blaming, complaining, and the screaming and lack of nutrients. But when I worked out, I felt stronger again. I felt my athletics coming back because I started to push my own body weight around. And three, when you're struggling, you can't complain about nothing. I was tired as heck. I was sweaty. I smelled like booty. My breath stunk. My everything. I was sweaty 8 days, like a dang slave ship. It's push-ups and sit-ups. And when you're struggling, when I'm on rep 900, because I was doing 1200 a day, and I'm struggling, I couldn't think about the judge or my background or who's there. All I could think about was this crusty ground and how I'm going to push myself back up. So that is part of the systems in the third pillar of the foundation, where you have to do things that force you to be present. And it usually comes from discomfort, cold shower, fasting, stretching, meditate. You know, if you're scared of speaking, go speak, exercise, heavy weights, sauna, cardio, sprinting. These things you have to be focused. You're like, I'm going to die. Your mind's like, I'm going to die. You're like, no, I'm not. And it's just you and you versus this task at hand. And then that starts to create a different understanding and relationship between you and your subconscious, you, your creator, the heart and the mind. And you start to separate those two voices of, I'm going to quit. No, I'm not. I want to snooze. No, I don't. I want to eat BS. No, I don't. I want to spend outside my budget. No, I don't. These are the same conflicts we have inside. And then I started to evaluate my environment, set the foundation. I started to reinvest into myself. And then I started to create and contribute. And then upon reflection, after evolving in personal development, it overflowed into business development. Then I took those systems, I applied it to sales and psychology. Then I started walking around, driving around Minnesota, slanging liquor. So now I went from drinking spirits to selling spirits to uplifting spirits. And my sales boosted through the roof because I had the systems for personal development. I just started plugging in business. And then I started implementing it into contribution. And that's what got me to New York. And when I got to New York, that's when I really look back on, okay, how did I get here? I was just 4 years ago or with 2018. I went to New York in 2021 and 2017, I was in that cell 5 years. And I'm like, how did I get here? I mean, man, with no family, how did I do this? And then that's when I reflected and got the Choose Yourself process, which is what we now implement, which is what I now speak about for any transition. And then when I got to New York, the liquor company shut down. And I was like, I'm not going back home. I know I just got six figures yanked from under me in one phone call, but I'm not going back home. So I started grinding. I started getting with other brands, started speaking more online. I started bartending. I started doing side jobs and trying to get this income going. And in this creation, Choose Yourself was born just from speaking online. I said it a few times. I do online poetry and motivational content. And then I said, Choose Yourself a couple of times. People were like, oh, that's awesome. I'm like, that's it. That's it. It just came out, though. I wasn't like, what is it going to be called? I was just saying it. It just came out a couple of times when I was just channeling. And I was like, dang, that's tight. Choose yourself. Because it kind of sounds selfish. But really, you think about it, it's the most selfless thing you can do. And so when that company shut down, I took those same systems that took me from solitude to personal development to top end sales to New York back into developing my next phase. And now those are the systems I use for every phase moving forward.
Wow. At the end of the interview, I'd love to ask you to, maybe if you want to share one of your poems, I would love that.
Oh yeah.
But thank you for all of that. That is such a, powerful story, but also testimony of just finding yourself in a place that was pretty dark, but then shifting your perspective and the way you oriented yourself to the story that you were telling yourself. Mm-hmm. And look at everything that's come out of that. It's kind of astonishing. It's like your entire world changed on day four when you made a different choice. I'd love to ask this. So my second question typically is, did you grow up in a religious household? You know, what did that look like for you and your family? But for you, how has that evolved over time? And has that helped you to kind of keep you going as you go along your life?
Heck yeah. Choose yourself as God's message. Okay. I just speak about it. It's in the Bible. The kingdom was within. Protect the vessel. You go from the Quran to the Latter-day Saint movement, the Book of Mormon. You go back to the Roman times with the Stoics. You go to the dinosaur ages when they had to be self-sufficient and represent what they were trying to do. It's about evolution of a living being. You have to invest in yourself. My mom, Christian. My dad, Christian. My mom's favorite memory of being with her dad, with my dad, was when he would read her the Bible and he would explain the Bible. So that's how they built their relationship. Yeah, they might've been high, but they were still reading the Bible. So I'm like, if you get high, read the Bible, that's a different type of belief. Y'all a different type of Christians, but that's cool though. If that's what you do, you're like, we're not gonna Netflix and chill. We're gonna get high and read the Bible. And I'm gonna tell you what he's saying. Well, my dad is super spiritual though. Like we talk and he always brings it back to God. And you know, as far as Jesus goes, that's what my mom would always thank Jesus for, a parking spot, for a short line. I'm like, what you thanking Jesus for? You just saw the spot. What if your eyes was closed? You're like, that'd be Jesus too. I'm like, what? I don't get it. The parking spot, somebody left. That's what happened to the parking spot. Now, what I saw was she was being grateful for opportunities. You have to believe in something greater than you in order to believe in yourself. Because believing in something greater than you makes you realize your problems are not that dang big and they're on purpose, which then allows you to believe in yourself to persevere. But I questioned religion, especially when my little brother died. I said, how are you going to kill a little 6-year-old? Who did that? God, the doctor, the judge, my mom, my dad, was I not there? What? How does this happen? And so I was lacking faith throughout the transition. And when I got to that day four and I started to take action, the first book I read after that was The Secret. And a big part of that is the law of attraction. What you believe is what you perceive. And your projections become the reflections. That's what it means to choose yourself to be chosen. If you ain't going to meet your fit partner in line at McDonald's, you're not going to meet your rich partner at the casino gambling his last dollar. You're not going to reach you're not going to meet your holistic wife at the strip club. You got to be the person first to be able to align with the version you want. All right. Because if you are a different version, if you're faking it, the mask won't last. You can fake the interview, but it won't stop you from getting fired when it's time to put in the work. And so questioning religion, questioning faith overall was intentional, because when I came back to spirituality, I knew it was deeper than religion. I started realizing religion was man-made construct. I'm like, how are there thousands of religions and thousands of gods? There's one that we're all talking about. So I don't care how you connect to it. I don't care what river you take to the ocean. I don't care what root you are in the oak tree. Figure out what it is. Could be the star, could be a tree, could be Allah, Moses, Jesus, Yosis, believes this. I don't know what you call it. So when I started to research personal development, it all came back to the God inside, the belief inside. And choosing yourself is the self God created, not the emotional self, not the habitual self. It's the one God created, the highest self that Jesus chose. Jesus chose his highest self. This is what we're talking about. Now, I'm seeking what Jesus was seeking. Thank you, Jesus, for your story. I believe he was real. I believe he did great for giving us all hope. But I ain't following Jesus. I'm following my intuition and authenticity from my creator, who went through Jesus, who went through Moses, who went through Muhammad. Who was right? I don't care. I don't care. If you find the similarities in every story, it comes down to the TEFIC, T-E-F-I-C, triggers, environment, foundation, investment, contribution. Jesus was a self-chooser. Everybody's like, no, he wasn't. He chose God. I'm like, well, he had triggers. He fasted for 40 days, triggered by hunger, ego, still chose faith over his emotions. Then he evaluated his environment. He left home because people didn't believe in him. He left his environment. Then he set the foundation, woke up before the sun, pray, fast, gratitude. He was a carpenter, contribution, creation. Then he invested into himself with self-belief, with his actions, with his faith and going blindly into something he didn't know. Then the fifth was contribution, ultimate sacrifice for you. Jesus was a self-chooser. Now, if you think Jesus was choosing God, you right, himself, inside, just like us.
Yeah. I have to say one of the best books I've ever read on Jesus for me, because, you know, you can read about Jesus, study Jesus. And for me, I just was like, I just don't, like, intellectually, I know, you know, people are telling me, it was called The Existential Jesus. And it was one of the best books I've ever read because it really dove deeply into him as a human being and went into the Bible and just dissected the stories that were told about him and what he said. And it just helped me so much deeply understand him and how he moved in the world and the struggles he had as, you know, just being out in the world with all these people or even by himself. And I thought, oh my gosh, I'm so grateful for this book because now I can, resonate with him on a different level, you know, heart to heart versus just the story, the clinical story. I don't know. It helped me.
I'm gonna read that.
Yeah, it was really, really, it was so good for me, honestly. So I appreciate your understanding and your compassion around him with his mandate and his story and what he had to do and how he moved in the world and how he needed alone time every once in a while. Mm-hmm. And just like we all do, some of us more than others, but that's another conversation.
Well, the people who can't be alone are the ones that need it the most.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me ask you something, because you're highly intuitive and thoughtful. And I think a lot of people, including me every once in a while, because I have to, we walk around with the mask on, right? We have to, because we have to show up in different situations with different people and be different with all these various groups that we know or that we interact with. Do you think that through the work that you've done on yourself, it has helped you to become more intuitive about other people's masks and the masks say they wear?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, the less masks we wear, the more we identify them. And I've worn a lot and I've shed a lot and I've helped a lot of people with their mask. And just from experience, education, reading, and historical facts and facts of psychology in the mind, it becomes easy to identify those things. I mean, you take me in nature, I can't tell you what a species of plant is. But somebody who did 20 years of studying the plants, they know by the leaf and the roots, even the branches without the leaves, they know what tree that is. And so what are you concerned about? What is your curiosity pointing towards? You need to tap into that. Mine is authenticity. How well can I know myself? And then how many versions of myself can I contribute to people that still are rooted in truth? Because you're not going to treat your mama like your first date. You ain't going to treat your child like your boss. But they all come from the same root. And when your son sees you talk to your boss, he should still see dad. He shouldn't see who is that. When your girl sees you talk to your mom, she should see, oh, I see why he's like that towards me. Not, why are you so disrespectful to your mom but not me? Well, it's coming. You stay in that relationship long enough, it's coming. All right. So the mask it always comes from, if it's intentional, it's manipulation. If it's unintentional, it's a lack of healing. And I feel like we all have to wear a mask. And that's the importance of authenticity, because the mask will represent a part of you, whether you like it or not, because you have an impression to make. So is the mask a resemblance of your core or a resemblance of something that you think other people want to see? Or is it hiding something you think other people don't want to see?
Great question. That's so good. That's so good.
Hope it's a resemblance of your core, but you got to know what that is. And that comes from solitude, accountability, and going back and tell your story. This is what we do in the workshops. It's a story brand workshop. You go into your story. Then when things outside don't align, if it shifts your energy, you become aware of it, but you don't become it because you know where it came from. Then you're able to move with alignment. It's not that you stopped this entertainment or this interaction. You started a different one, which deters you from those choices, whether it's relationships, financial choices, whatever you're allowing. And the story is what generates the mask, because the story creates our self-belief. Our self-belief is nowadays weakened or strengthened based off of how other people feel about us. And so when you go in your story, you generate a sense of self-belief, but you can't just go look at it. You then got to do the work right now to show you care about your story. Then you're like, I don't even know why I care about other people's opinion. I don't even know why I'm worried about what's going to happen. I already know what I've been through. I'm undefeated. I already know I became powerful when I lost this or I transition through this. So now when the next thing comes, I'm not trying to hold on to it. I just let it pass because I know it's on the other side.
Beautiful, beautiful. Thank you. Thank you. I'd love to ask you the main question of the podcast, which is, I would so appreciate, you can tell one story, you can tell two stories of something that you've either experienced or witnessed in your life that you thought was magical or maybe miraculous or mysterious even.
Well, I'm big, you don't call me big dream, Hakeem, for nothing. But I'm big on my dreams. And there was a dream I had that was about, it was the first time my little brother visited me after he passed. And it was after, it was in jail. I think it was about 2 months after that fourth day. Had to be about 6 to 8 weeks. And I was in jail, but I was sleeping and I was holding him and he was healthy. He was like 2 years old, 1.5. I was holding him, but I could hear his voice. And it was saying, Hakeem is going to be okay. Now, through research, right? That is me holding myself. Matthew was a resemblance of my inner child, which is now what I realize why he was here. Because he was to show me how to love the little child that I never even knew when I was younger. And me seeing that in him then gave me the ability to be accountable on day four. Because I finally started to choose myself. Because I saw that it was possible when he was born. And I felt the pain when he was gone. And I knew the consequences of not choosing myself. Because if I didn't choose him, if I didn't love him, and I do that to me, it's going to result in the same thing. I'm going to stay in here forever. So that dream was the first time I saw him. And I feel like a whole burden, a whole building, a whole world lifted off of me. And that was when my faith changed. That's when I started believing in God. That moment, I said, oh, who sent him? That was real. I was holding him. He had hair, didn't usually have hair. He was talking. He was young. And he was talking. I'm like, what was that? But I was so high for so many years. I was passed out. Now, I wasn't getting REM sleep. I was on the verge of death. So this is my first time 2 months after being sober, but the first time since probably, 10 years, 8 years, even in college. If it wasn't during the season, I was out almost every night. So that experience, man, y'all pay attention to your dreams. And if you don't know what they mean, look them up. They got dream logs online. They got AI. They have Google. They got chat forums. It means a lot. And it doesn't mean what you think it means when you're in the dream. Like, that was weird. The floor was unstable and a dog jumped off the roof and then a plane crashed. I'm like, look that up. You better look that up because that's your subconscious talking to you.
Yeah, I mean, and also, honestly, what's really powerful about this story that you're sharing is that, I mean, I don't know, for me, I would have gotten up and been like, oh my gosh, I think that, other worlds are real, or that heaven is real, or that, I might see my brother again, he can come back mm-hmm. to me in the future. Did any of that cross your mind?
Well, I knew I would see him after this life. After that, and that belief that there was an afterlife then generated the belief that there was something bigger, something greater than what was going on in my head in that cell, in that dang jailhouse. It was like, it's not about football, not about money. It's not about relationships. It's not about what you can do and how much you can try to show that you're okay. It's about you being okay with not being okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. You've just kind of blown my mind a little bit. I just feel like a little off kilter. What is also singular about this experience for me is that you have this dream, but then you also have the I don't know. I think bravery is one component, intelligence, you know, thoughtfulness. Later, I know it didn't happen right away, but to consider everything that it meant and to revisit it. And then not only that, integrate it, which is like no small feat. And that kind of opens your heart wide open. And opening your heart like that can be really scary and exhausting. And because you don't know quite what's going to happen. So you have to have a lot of faith in the universe, in God, in yourself to do that kind of work, which it seems like you have that in spades. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think now keeping your heart open, it is actually a physical thing, but it's energetic. It's energetic, you know, it's a frequency, heart space. And I've worked with heart coherence, special heart coherence healers. Also, I'm hosting a retreat with a horse whisperer who also heals in the heart space. So that'll be fun, October 1st in Sedona. But the heart space is made for our spirit, right? It's made for our spirituality. The mind is created by the experience. Now, there's a lot of people who are able to use the mind to tap into the heart. I mean, not a lot in compared to how many people are on the planet, but there's, I would say, thousands of healers, holistic healers, spiritual people who understand that relationship. And to open your heart, you have to show love to yourself. That's the only way. The purest form of love comes from the inside to the inside, because ain't nobody messing with it on the way to your heart. Once you start giving it out and want it to other people, now you're waiting for other people to love you. Now your heart closes down because you've been disappointed, or somebody cheated, or somebody stole from you, manipulated, lied, all these things. Now you're like, I don't want, now my mind is like, don't do this, don't go over here, don't go this. Now, to be able to decipher between staying open and having boundaries. Boundaries are also staying open. Because if you don't have boundaries, your environment can force you to close. That's discernment. The more open you stay with your heart, the stronger boundaries you have, the more resilience you have. And it's not about, oh, this person let me down, let me go open my heart to the next. You become more specific about where you go in life. You only go where you can have an open heart. You don't keep going back to those environments. If you do, you ain't never gonna be able to open your heart. So that's why our environment is so important. And that's why we do a challenge 30 days, three times a year in the Choose Yourself community. No toxins, no vices. It's just you and life. No sugar, liquor, weed, screens, nicotine, caffeine, no gluten, no dairy, no grains for 30 days. And that means no video games, no porn, no gambling, no doom scrolling. 30 days straight. No coffee, no tea, no sweeteners, no freaking honey, no agave. Just you versus you and all these emotions and addictions. And you start to realize how powerful you are without anything. And nobody, they don't promote this as a health freaking fix. They don't say, oh, just put down all the vices. They're like, no, take them. Take them. That's the norm. So we break free, and then it changes your relationship with life. It allows your gut to heal. You allow your dopamine receptors to heal. So now you're not hooked on quick dope. You can't open your heart if you're constantly waking up caffeine, then processed food middle of the day with more Red Bull, then taking sleeping meds and a glass of wine to sleep. You're not going to open your heart as much as it should be. And once we experience that abundance of life without vices and stimulants, now you can notice the clouds in the sun. Now you get real dopamine from walking. Now you get real dopamine from conversation, because you're not worried about, oh, I need a stimulant so I can do with my kids. Oh, I need another freaking drug so I can, golly. So I think the best way to open your heart is to eliminate the toxins in your environment. Because toxin, I mean, even the news, man, like, how much do you watch that stuff? I don't at all, but I know people in my family who just watch it all day. And I'm like, of course you can't freaking be grateful. It looks scary outside.
Yes. Yes. It's so true. So true. I have the same thing in my family. Thank you so much for that, for speaking about the heart, because it's something that I think about and contemplate every day and in connection, you know, with others, especially. I think about that. I would so appreciate if you'd share one of your poems. Do you feel like that's a good thing? I don't want to.
Heck yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah. Yay. Always, always.
Okay, good.
Now, understand there's a balance in the universe. Good, bad, light, dark, up, down, life, death, God and the devil. And it all resides inside as long as we're alive. And you get two choices when it comes to your relationship with both. You could be a deal maker or you could be a deal breaker. Which one are you going to choose? But understand this. If you make a deal with the devil won't show up as the devil because you won't make the deal. It might show up as sugar, liquor, nicotine, porn, weed, pills. It might show up as the urge to cheat on yourself or your spouse or a daily cheat meal. It might show up as a snooze button. Boop. Now watch your dreams get killed. Because if you stay in your bed, your dreams stay in your head, choosing your feelings instead of what you said last night when that alarm was set. Are you choosing your feelings or you're choosing your future? He can see you. If you make a deal with the devil won't show up as the devil because you won't make the deal. It might show up as self-sabotage or self-destruction because whenever God gives you something good, you corrupt it and abruptly interrupt it, seeking the victim's mentality by disrupting your production. But those weren't the instructions you constructed. Where'd your faith go? It's the temptations and contradictions, the hesitations and restrictions that keep the friction between our addiction and our mission. He can see you. Causing a contradiction in our conviction due to the deception of our depiction that leads us to our own crucifixion. Come on now. Now, how are you going to be overweight and religious? Don't your book say the body is a temple? Well, are you being malicious or nutritious? Or is the text fictitious? Because I could see your choices showing in your physique. And I could see your sin showing in your skin. Come on now. Now, you ain't got to lift weights. But you got to be cool with the way your body disintegrates, fickle and frail, all the way to the grave. You don't got to eat healthy and balanced, but you got to be cool with the condition of your skin and accept REM sleep as a challenge. And you ain't got to do cardio, but you got to be cool with the notoriety of society with a variety of anxiety and be prepared to feel anxious every time your heart rate increases because you ain't never worked out your heart before. Come on now. There's a balance to the universe, and it's not about being a tight ass. You know the formula. 80% healthy, 20% fun, 100% happy. Life can't be redone, but you got to have the systems in place to replenish and recover because it's you versus you, and you still got to take care of each other. So if you're trying to tap in for some accountability, go ahead and join me in the CYC to GYM, and that's Grow Your Mind so you can skip the snooze and wake up on time. Then you better get up, get over it, and get after it. Choose yourself and let's get it. Woo!
That's it. That's a wrap on my incredibly powerful conversation with Hakeem. I'm so grateful that he decided to come onto the podcast and share about his life, but also the life of his precious baby brother. And frankly, I am just kind of still gobsmacked by his mother, who appears to be an unstoppable force of nature. I'm really glad that he talked about her as well, because honestly, it makes me so happy knowing that she's in the world. If you want to find out a little bit more about Hakeem, there are going to be links in the episode show notes to his Insta, his YouTube, his website, and his Facebook. I really do urge you to do a deeper dive on this gentleman who's creating such goodness for everyone else in the world. He's really doing some powerful work, and it's work that many of us desperately need. Thank you for listening, and here's my one request. Be like Hakeem. I mean, he never gave up. And I said before that his mom is kind of unstoppable, but Hakeem, in the middle of his life, in the middle of the darkest part of his life, when he was in prison, he received a miracle. He understood that he was going to be okay. He understood that he could create magic in his own life. And then he's created more magic for everyone else. So be like Hakeem and never lose faith that you can do good in the world, that you can show up for others, and that you too can create beauty and hope and joy for every single person out there.
Well, free content all day, every day. Big Dream Hakeem, Instagram, TikTok, Choose Yourself channel, also Instagram, YouTube. And that's also the title of the podcast, Choose Yourself channel on all platforms. You can shoot me your info at chooseyourself.info or just comment CYC on any of my posts and you'll get the link to join the Choose Yourself community. We meet every Tuesday at 10 a.m. EST to GYM, and that's Grow Your Mind. You should hear the testimonials of the self-choosers in the CYC. Man, it's amazing. My book, My Story, The Principles and the Systems is on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. It's called Choose Yourself to Be Chosen. We host workshops multiple times a year around the country. We host retreats a couple times a year as well for the deep, prolonged healing that you're looking for. But the purpose is to help you go into your story, build your brand, and then pull from an overflow into the people you love.